Here's the latest from Canadian lawyer, Law Times and Lexpert on July 7th, 2023. I'm Steve Randall. The defendant in a recent case from the Court of King's Bench for Saskatchewan may well be giving a thumbs down after the judge concluded that a thumbs up emoji constituted acceptance of a contract to sell 87 metric tons of flax. In early June, Justice Keane granted a summary judgment decision in favour of grain buyer Southwest Terminal Limited, writing, "There was a valid contract between the parties that the defendant breached by failing to deliver the flax." He ordered seller Acta Land and Cattle Limited to pay damages of more than $82,000, representing the costs borne by SWT to go into the spot market at a higher price to make good on its own contracts with clients. MLT Aikens LLP partner Josh Morrison, whose firm handled the case for the plaintiff, said this case has a lot of implications for modern contract law.
I thought this case was really interesting because it's basic contract formation, and then layered over it is the Sale of Goods Act, and layered over that is the Electronic Information Act. And so I always thought this case was really, really interesting because from a common law perspective, it's like a classic law school question where you could make arguments on both sides. And then it had, you know, some kind of unique wrinkles to it.
Morrison also has some advice for those using phones and texts to discuss contracts.
If your business is conducted in this way and you need to rely on those contracts, obviously clarity is best, and a thumbs up emoji may lead to litigation. On the flip side, I think if I'm intending not to create a binding contract, I would want to use language that is clear on that.
When Vancouver-based Ron Segev decided to expand his firm into Toronto, Ontario's burgeoning iGaming market was a critical factor. But he was also looking much farther east. Segev invited Manav Bhargava to lead Segev LLP's gaming and regulatory compliance practice in the province. In addition to being a member of the Law Society of Ontario, Bhargava is licensed to practice in India. Segev spoke about why the Indian market was appealing to his firm.
This came across our radar, honestly, you know, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, where our Canadian clients and our U.S. clients were starting to do business in India. They were making investments in Indian interactive entertainment companies. They were consulting to those companies. They were providing software services to those companies. The feedback that we were getting from them was that it was an enormously exciting market, first and foremost. And then secondly, that they were having some difficulty navigating through the market with various service providers.
Bhargava spoke about one of his roles at the firm with India cross-border work.
My work as a dual licensed attorney would be to also bridge the gap, understand the way Indian businesses work, what they're looking, what they're used to, and serve their needs in a way that they are familiar with. So that is going to be one of the major challenges and opportunities that we seek to exploit.
Both Segev and Bhargava have worked in-house at technology-focused companies, and Segev says that affects how they see their role as legal advisors.
When you're embedded as general counsel, you're always, you know, you're using we language, right? That's my team. And so, you know, we like to say that, you know, at Segev LLP, we give a damn and we score wins for our clients. That's not just, you know, catchy marketing. That's actually born of our in-house experience that, you know, we spent years scoring wins for our team. Well, we still have that in our DNA. We like to score wins for our clients.
Among the new changes to the Canadian Environmental Protection Act is a new right to a healthy environment. They also include provisions aimed at curbing animal testing, which Caitlin Mitchell, Director of Legal Advocacy at Animal Justice Canada, says her organisation is excited to see.
For me, one of the most important amendments that was made was requiring that the ministers publish a plan within 2 years that specifies initiatives to promote the development and implementation of non-animal methods. And is going to then have to report annually to Parliament on progress made under the plan. And I guess that a plan doesn't sound like the most exciting or useful tool there is, but what we've seen from places like the United States, where they similarly have this requirement to create a plan to use alternative methods, what we've seen there is that actually it has resulted in serious, meaningful change.
The centralization of court services in Toronto has been good for efficiency and economies of scale, Ontario Chief Justice Michael Tulloch told attendees at a recent conference. Still, it has impacted frontline staff put into the position of taking longer to get to work. On the one hand, he said at a Canadian Bar Association forum on June 21st on the roles of journalists and the judiciary in preserving public trust in the justice system, centralizing services has modernized the courts. However, depending on their job classification and salary, frontline staff may have a more difficult and expensive time getting to their jobs.
A lot of their positions are not adequately classified. So that their income is, you know, a fraction of what is to be expected of someone who is doing the kind of work that they're doing. These people are the frontline staff who we depend on. A lot of them, when they were in the suburban areas, at least they were working in areas where they could find parking or access their employment easily. They were working closer to home. The fact that the court is now located or centralized in the urban area, where Toronto is perhaps one of the most expensive cities in Canada, right? It creates that added stress and economic strain on them. And when you consider that their pay is at the lowest of scales within our system, I think it creates a problem. And so what you found is that a lot of them, they have looked for job elsewhere outside of the courts, and it's hard for us to actually hire people to do the job that's needed to be done because of the lack of resources and the lack of compensation that is required in a very expensive urban area. And so this, in my view, also directly impacts access to justice, because as you have read, a number of courtrooms were closed, you know, for significant periods of time. And I think this is a direct result of the lack of resources that we're facing.
You'll find the links to these stories in the show notes, and to get the latest CL Talk episodes automatically in your favorite podcast app, just click follow or subscribe.